You leave tomorrow? I thought you leave Wednesday. Tomorrow, today's Tuesday.
Tomorrow is Wednesday.
I don't know what day it is. I'm so confused.
And the day after that is Thursday.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
This is how weeks work, Dave.
Welcome to the Julian calendar.
I know you're here because you want to know what our thoughts are about the Iran, US, Israel war. And we let you down. I get that. You want to know how it ended, but we're not going to talk about that today because the Senate had to go on and just ruin everything and say, we got to pass like the most consequential legislation of the last 5 years.
Literally hours ago.
Just a minute ago. So we're going to talk about that, but we're going to delay that Iran conversation because we will have it because we need to know whether or not I am a panickin and whether or not Kyle is a Trustican?
I think you should leave branding to Trump.
I don't care.
Trump's the master of branding.
Kyle is a patriot. David is a coward.
Yeah, exactly. So
like we're going to have more accurate.
We'll have that conversation on Friday in the SCIF. So keep an eye out for that. It's going to be a good one.
Sure.
But today we're going to talk about the big, beautiful bastard bill.
Yes. And yeah. If you are mad,
that would be the BBBB.
That is the BBBB.
I'm yes. A quad B guy.
Yeah.
It's bigger and better.
And if you're mad about the fact that we're not going to cover Iran today, then you should write to your senators and representatives and tell them that they fucked up and they shouldn't have voted for the BBB morning.
You know, actually, they read our comments, I hear.
Our senators and reps?
Yeah, so you should probably go into our comments and let them know how you feel about the BBB.
That might be the most effective way to contact your congressman.
Yeah, you know, everybody's always questioning, like, I don't know how to make a change in the world. I don't know how to change politics. You know, it's crazy, but we surprisingly have some senators in our comments. they're checking it right now.
We need to make some sock puppet accounts. It's just like Tom Tillis, like, I'm retiring. This BBB is stupid in our comments. Yeah. Perfect.
I love it. Okay, so the BBB, the big beautiful bill, stirred up a lot of controversy. Mm-hmm. It took a long time to get to this point. Obviously, there were provisions that were inflaming social media for the last several weeks as this thing was being debated. And it changed forms so many times, we kind of need to go through and recap what in it was in there originally that changed, what got removed, what actually made it through ultimately. So why don't we start with... with the bill itself, it passed today. How did that go down?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, to describe the overall picture of it, 940 pages, passed 51-50 with Vice President J.D. Vance coming in to do the tiebreaker, which is the role of the vice president in the Senate. And the no votes really came from three Republicans and all the Democrats. It was Susan Collins, Rand Paul, and Tom Tillis. Interestingly, Tom Tillis announced his retirement when he was giving his speech about the bill and largely just to shortcut it. I mean, basically, he says, you know, when Obama came in and said, you're going to be able to keep your doctor and you're going to be keep your insurance, but we're going to pass Obamacare. It's going to make everything better. And then that didn't happen. Democrats got devastated between 2008 to 2010. By 2014, just as bad. What he predicts is that by doing this and doing the cuts to Medicaid and SNAP that are in the bill, Republicans are going to suffer the same fate. They're going to say Trump had promised not to cut, you know, healthcare services for poor people, and that this will end up doing that. It's an interesting tale because that's a perspective. It's not necessarily true, but it's an interesting tale to tell, which we will be doing.
I think it is important to note that it is 51-50 on the votes, though. Like, that to me suggests a price signal of. It is pretty much impossible to make the bill any better. Like, there's
this
no changes to
market,
be made.
Market equilibrium within Congress right now?
Well, that's actually kind of the thing is, like, how many votes lately, like, on important bills? I feel like there's been so many, like, even going back into when Kamala Harris was vice president, are settled by tiebreaker. Like, there's, like, a shocking amount of bills that keep getting decided by tiebreakers.
To me, all that says is it's incredibly partisan.
Yeah, but... Also, because like there have been people who have been holding up the bills in committees and this or that committee. Like Lindsey Graham was holding up the bill in committee until the Iran strikes happened, right? And then all of a sudden it's like, oh no, it's out of committee now. Right? Like,
Unbelievable.
Like these are the domestic politics situations that are happening in this situation. I think that's important to always have it in context here.
Not to drag us into Iran, but is that why we struck Iran at the end of the day? It wasn't BB.
I don't think that's the only reason.
The tax cuts.
Like I don't think that I think that's like a relevant piece of data that's there.
It wasn't BB, it was the BBB.
Yeah, right. Cool.
I think that's a relevant piece of data is that he was holding it up during this time period. I mentioned this on our last episode.
I remember.
Yeah, you know, before. But that is the case. Like it's like understanding the realism of the political realities in place is like, I always want to kind of stress that is the tax cuts are incredibly important and they're really good, but then there's like the increased deficit, which is really bad. And there's like a balancing act to be had with understanding the BBB.
Yeah. Kyle, you're wrong. The Trump administration assures me that tariffs and the roaring economy this will create will not make a deficit problem.
Roaring economy. That sounds familiar. Where have I heard that before? It's like some New Deal shit.
That was the roaring 20s.
Well, I mean, I'm thinking back to
the roaring 20s were quite
roaring. When was the last time we were told?
By a budget cut and a tax cut, right? Under, what was his name? First president right after Woodrow Wilson.
Calvin Coolidge.
Yeah. Harding and then Coolidge.
All I'm saying is this seems like a lot more government spending that's supposed to increase the economy, grow the economy, and I don't see that as happening.
Well, if you're a defense contractor,
I think it's in a lot of ways less so about the government spending and more so about the lack of revenue that's coming in. So because right now we don't really part of the speculation where everybody's just speculating on numbers is we don't actually know what the growth is going to be. So there's a lot of intangibles where it's like it could be the Trump line where it's, you know, where we're growing our way out of this and it's really not, the deficit really isn't a problem. Or it could be like, there's just not enough growth and we have this massive deficit problem. Yeah. Like it could be anywhere in between that. Sure. The answer probably is some sort of synthesis between the two where it's like the deficit's going to increase, but it's probably not by as much as like the CBO might be thinking it is because the CBO numbers are like always wrong. They never project growth well. So it's like, it's one of those things where it's like where it is in that line and the stuff around it that also comes in. Well, we have to see where those other variables are tweaked as well.
But important to it is that the BBB includes a $5 trillion deficit or debt ceiling increase, which is the principal reason, the only reason that Rand Paul voted no. He left his comments on the floor, and I feel like it'd be worthwhile to listen to him.
Mr. President.
I recognize a senator from Kentucky.
In deciding whether to vote for the big, not-so-beautiful bill, I've asked a very specific question. Will the deficit be more or less next year? The answer, without question, is this bill will grow the deficit. The federal government has fancy formulas and hundreds of wonky accountants who inform us of their projections over 10 years. But you often can't trust these projections. In an excellent piece written by the Foundation for Economics and Education entitled "The CBO's Projections Are Worse Than Useless," Eric Schuller writes, "Long-term analysis and language is commonplace in U.S. national politics, but it achieves no useful outcome. It confuses far more than it clarifies. It does not provide accurate estimates of long-term results. It does not improve the average voter's understanding of policy effects. And it gives politicians a means to claim they are being fiscally responsible without actually ever exercising any prudence whatsoever. Sometimes the predictions are off because a new Congress is elected and changes the law. Eric Schuller writes that for any projection of a 10-year budget to be accurate, the Congressional Budget Office has to assume that the law won't change for 10 years, even as most of the politicians that make the laws risk being replaced every 2 years, and all of them advocate for changes of one stripe or another. Schuller states that few in Washington will admit Congress has a knack for starting any proposed cuts in the later years, while letting spending run wild in the immediate future. Sometimes these predictions are off by $1 trillion or so because the economy grew more slowly or more quickly than anticipated.
Yeah, so he's agreeing with you, but it's particularly interesting because what is going to be the net effect of pushing the debt ceiling out that far will be that all the short-term mechanisms that fiscal hawks have to check short-term spending is now off the table. They're just screwed until we hit $5 trillion more in debt, which will be, you know, not a long time, unfortunately, due to the deficit, but it's gonna remove that annual to biannual discussion about what are we going to do about debt, about spending. Trump is, you know, doing this for various different reasons, you could claim, but it's unarguable that the effect is going to be to defang the fiscal hawks for the foreseeable future when this passes.
Interesting. And not to take us too far afield here, but this kind of coincides in timing with his campaign against Thomas Massie, who happens to be a fiscal hawk.
Yeah.
Is there a parallel between these two things?
Definitely. I mean, Thomas didn't vote for it. The margin is tight in the House. They didn't need his vote at the end of the day, but for some reason, Trump loves to attack Massie, and it's been a back and forth on Truth Social and X since then.
It's been for years. It's been back and forth. It's been kind of funny because he also sponsored Massie, and he always calls him a tough cookie. It's kind of a funny back and forth. Sometimes it's a bit kayfabe to me. Like I think there is some sort of obviously they're at odds with each other, but there is kind of like a
political theater component.
Well, there is some of that, but it also has repercussions where there is now a PAC that's out here spending to attack.
And noted, this is the Trump super PAC. Mm-hmm. This happened because it was signaled to the Trump super PAC to do this. This is probably where it might be stepping beyond the kayfabe into something different, right? Yeah. I mean, this thing's brutal.
In the past, I think it was more kayfabe than it is now. It's becoming increasingly less.
So. Well, I mean, I don't think it was kayfabe when it came to the COVID thing. I think that was legitimate. I mean, it was real outrage that he might stop this thing, right? I mean, that's my recollection of the feel of the time.
You're talking about the bill, the CARES Act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The CARES Act. Thomas Massie drove up and made everyone vote for it in person.
Also on war resolutions with Iran during the Soleimani strike, too. There was also a period on that. It's actually funny. I was listening to Thomas Massie on Theo Vaughn's podcast last week. And Thomas was talking about those moments, and he was talking about how he went to vote for the Democrats' war resolutions to keep Trump from going into war with Iran, which was never going to happen after Soleimani. But Trump personally called Thomas Massie and told him, and Thomas walked away from the conversation being like, I don't think Trump actually ever wants to go to war with Iran, but he doesn't want Congress limiting, taking away control from him that because in that way it's like taking away leverage in his talks with Iran.
Sure.
If that's not on the table, it's like going into a poker game and just being like, I'm not going to use kings or aces.
I'm not going to bluff.
Yeah. But that's kind of the dynamic that exists there.
And Thomas
sometimes.
Massie's side of it is the war powers were delegated to Congress, mm-hmm. not to the president to use willy-nilly. Mm-hmm. And the War Powers Act does not legitimate these strikes. It didn't legitimate Soleimani, and it doesn't legitimate this because it's not a present threat to America.
Right.
Right. So I think it's worth actually reviewing the ad. Let's check out the attack ad because I think it really gets a sense of how far beyond kayfabe this whole thing is, and noting kind of when it dropped, especially.
What happened to Thomas Massie? President Trump is banning sex changes on minors. Massie voted against it. President Trump is cutting taxes and saving Kentucky families $10,000. Massie voted against it. President Trump is securing our border and deporting criminal aliens. Massie voted against Trump again. And after Trump obliterated Iran's nuclear weapons program, Massie sided with Democrats and the Ayatollah. Let's fire Thomas Massie. MAGA Kentucky is responsible for the content of this effort.
What? Jeez.
Yeah. And note, that dropped on the anniversary of Thomas Massie's wife's death.
Oof.
Yeah. That's a low blow, man.
That's fucked up.
Those are low blows. Those are way beyond the pale. I mean, for attack ads in politics.
Do you think the wife's death thing was coincidence, or do you think that was purposely planned to be put on that?
Few things are, and when it comes to dropping ads.
I didn't realize it happened on the same day.
Yeah. Few things are coincidence.
Yeah. Yeah. Possible, but I doubt it.
It is just one of those things. This is all happening during the BBB stuff, so there is kind of a small window may or may not be coincidence. I don't know if it is.
Well, I think the larger argument probably
because there's probably going to be more ads that come too. So that feels more coincidental.
The reason to drop it now is to take advantage of the media cycle of it to get eyes on it, and then specifically not to change Thomas Massie because everyone knows you're not gonna.
No, you're not going to.
It's about cowing other Republicans in the House from getting upset about what happened to the BBB in the Senate side. And that is honestly what Thomas Massey predicted, which is that there were changes, and we'll review those, and there were failed changes, and there were a large amount of things that were used as carrots for Republicans to vote on in the House side that were removed on the Senate side.
Well, let's get into those. So what things were changed in the bill?
Well, so the remittance tax, which was interesting because we had a good dialogue about this on the House side.
5%.
And remittance taxes, they're taxes on the transfer of money out of the country.
Yeah.
Usually
like immigrants usually come in, work here for higher wages, then send the money back home to their families, right. That type of thing. And so, I actually think when we talked about that, I think we had said that it's likely going to be changing in the Senate, is that price. Because I know I saw one senator was like, I'm going to try to make it 15%. But then I also saw like most of the dialogue was like 5% is going to be too high. It's probably going to go down to like 1 or 2%.
And yeah. That's what think about like a bargaining chip. Yeah. So that's down to 1% from 5%. It's still going to, you know, it's not trivial in aggregate when you measure the amount of money going out. And it also might chill out Mexico a little bit. We'll see, you know, because we are theorizing that some of the...
That was one of the dynamics that was existing there with the Mexican president she was like encouraging the riots that were going on, then like softly fell back.
Peaceful protest, Kyle. Yeah. Peaceful protest.
Yeah, it was just kind of
peaceful riot.
That in itself was interesting.
Yeah. But will this kind of temper that a little bit and improve potentially better deals with Mexico? That's kind of what it'll seem like, right?
For sure. Yeah. What else changed?
So the salt tax was changed.
What is the salt tax?
The salt tax is on high tax states. You're able to deduct your state taxes from your federal taxes. So it lowers your total taxable liability.
Gotcha.
So the House had $10,000 where it's like triggering at. It's now up to $40,000. But only for households making under 500K. So the very wealthy, that it's not going to change their salt tax as much.
Gotcha.
So that's probably in net, you know, it is what it is. And that's only for 5 years. So this is another one of those short-term things. Now, what it's going to be is that the game theory of these short terms that was in 2017, that is in a lot of these, is keep this in mind. This is only for Republicans to have something to run on. Keeping the salt tax so that they can then get moderates to win those Senate seats in high tax states and high blue states.
So just to be clear, the amount that can be deducted from your federal taxes based on your state taxes has been increased so people can deduct more?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's net a tax cut, if you will, for those households that qualify.
Correct.
Got it.
Right. So it boosts the child tax credit from $2,000 to $2,200.
And marginal.
I love it.
10%. Small potatoes.
I can do a lot with $200, Kyle.
it's not a massive change.
Yeah.
You know? Like, yeah. It's like, we got to get more 200 Man. For us to get whatever we need. Like, it just seems like a funny
thing. About this. That's $600 for me.
Yeah,
that's $800 for me.
I'm not saying it's not significant. It's just like, it's one of those things where you're just like, somebody was in there fighting for that extra $200 is more so what I find funny.
The senior tax deduction increased from $4,000 to $6,000 for taxpayers over 65s with a phase reduction for higher earners.
What's senior tax deduction?
So that's taxes on Social Security.
Oh, gotcha.
So
why do you pay taxes on Social Security? We don't need to go down that rabbit hole. That seems ridiculous.
Well, this is actually one of the Trump campaign promises was that there would be no taxes on Social Security. Yeah. But when the bill was going through the House, this was a large part of it. There was people were trying to get it in, but they just couldn't manage to make it work with the, you know, who's voting and stuff like that. Huh. I know this was a big part of the dialogue during the time.
I didn't mean to interrupt. Sorry, buddy.
No, it's good.
The taxes work more like an IRA than a Roth IRA. So you don't pay taxes going in. Those are just deducted from your paycheck. So taxing on the way out is taxing that old income. That's the argument for taxing Social Security. That's why it's traditionally been that way. And that's before it pre-exists Roth IRAs by 50 years, right? Or something like that. I can't remember exactly when Roth IRAs came into being, but it's something like that. So the Medicaid provider tax changes also changed. There's a provider tax cap. Reductions are delayed and phased. The caps gradually lower from 6% to 3.5% by 2031 rather than a steeper immediate cut.
All right, what is a Medicaid provider tax?
It is the tax on the provider of a Medicaid service.
So doctors who accept Medicaid for insurance?
Yeah,
right. They would pay taxes on those services that they offer under Medicaid?
Yes.
And so their tax rate for providing Medicaid services to the public has gone down?
Yes.
Seems good.
Yeah, but it more gradually goes down over time now. It was just getting cut.
I see,
and that's kind of a common theme. It's also true for like the tax, the green stuff. all that was a hard cut, and now it's a phased out set of cuts. So like solar panels.
Where is it currently getting phased out? Because I remember during the House conversation, it moved to being like, it wouldn't start phasing out to like 5 years, but has that been reduced at all? I haven't seen
it. No, the immediate phase, as I understand it now, there's an immediate cut, but it's a relatively small one, and then it slowly phases.
So there is an immediate cut? Because like originally it was something like the cuts don't even start for another 5 years, and then they were going to start phasing.
Right.
But now it's tightened up a little bit on the time frame. Interesting.
So are a lot of these changes that were made designed to appease Democrats to get them to vote for it? Or because I mean, obviously... Mods,
yeah, moderate Republicans.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. So because I'm noticing
all
the
Democrats
vote
are
going to
vote against it,
no matter what.
Yeah. Right.
Because of the next thing, Medicaid work requirements. That's a no-go for all Democrats. And
which
this is the interesting thing.
Which is what?
So it just requires that if you're between the ages of like 18 to 30 something, you are able-bodied young adult is what it's categorized as. You have to do something to get Medicaid. You got to be looking for a job, volunteering at least 80 hours a month. Not even that much for a month.
Right.
Right.
And why is that such a deal breaker for Democrats?
You know, so you have to understand Medicaid is for Democrats for at least 30 years now has been the vehicle in which they are trying to implement universal health care.
Sure.
So this is
Medicaid
a step back from that. When you think about it in terms of their macro strategy, there just isn't a... There really isn't anything else there, right? They don't really have another backup strategy. So by removing these people, this is 80 million people that are currently receiving Medicaid to subsidize their insurance or outright have their insurance coverage. About 11 million people out of that 80 million people would be affected and probably fall off the rolls if they did not do something about it. Now, this assumes they literally continue to not do anything.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
And no, these are not people on disability, right? That's a completely different
program. Like able-bodied people. And correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't the lack of work requirements become a thing during COVID? Wasn't that like a COVID thing?
Oh,
that happened. What was that? There was some massive.
Kendall would know. I mean, yeah, we're talking.
There was some massive restructuring of Medicaid that happened due to COVID, and a lot of this is like taking the COVID Medicaid stuff back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and a lot of states implemented work requirements. There was the Supreme Court case about that, and basically said that states could do that because it's technically a transfer program to the states to run Medicaid. So a lot of states implemented work requirements. Yeah. Montana did, a lot of like Arkansas.
Like during COVID and just people losing their jobs and things like that, Medicaid just became way more prevalent for people. Like just way more people came into this. So this is trying to get those people who really don't need to be on Medicaid realistically off Medicaid because they just started taking, they're like, oh, I'm just going to stay here.
Well,
like, and that kind of became what happened.
And there's lots of blue states where that's been the true since 2017. Like they passed Medicaid expansion immediately and they've been running that ever since. Hmm. So there's also a $35 copayment that can be charged to patients using Medicaid services. That's wise because then it allows you to arbitrage Medicaid services. Like you have to pay something to go in, therefore, you know,
you might pick and choose when you go in.
Yeah.
Maybe not for every little thing.
Yeah. And it's not a huge amount of money, $35, right?
Sure.
So there's a new this is new in the Senate, got put into it, is a $25 billion rural hospital transformation program that was also to get rural states in, to buy into the bill. Because that's one of the bigger areas in rural states is Medicaid access has become important because all these small insurance providers have been completely wiped out by Obamacare. And they were more likely to use those providers because they had higher deductibles, lower copays, and therefore they weren't qualified under Obamacare. They're all gone now. So all of those guys are now on Medicaid subsidized insurance for the most part.
Right.
This would then say, okay, we're going to invest in the supply side of that, which will not help prices, but will help keep rural hospitals open. That said, you know, there's some challenges anytime you're subsidizing supply side.
Sure.
Right. I mean, there's waste, fraud, and abuse are huge. And do not put past a hospital to do waste, fraud, and abuse. Okay. So next is, of course, we got the energy tax credits. And then the big debate on that was mostly on the Hill, as I understand it, talking to some people from the Hill, who I just happened to be talking to, was around mostly the phase in of these things and how to
that's my understanding,
off ramp a lot of this stuff where they're trying to eliminate.
So they're getting rid of tax credits for buying electric vehicles.
This is the Inflation Reduction Act subsidies that had nothing to do with inflation. It had everything to do with green energy.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's phasing all of that stuff back.
And that's the thing that's the difference about it, right? Is like there's a difference between selling an idea and just lying to people, mm-hmm. right? And the Inflation Reduction Act was a profound lie, Right. And that's maybe the difference between Tom Tillis' reservations and this is that, you know, you can understand why you're saying, hey, look, my aim is not to take away health insurance coverage for the poorest and most vulnerable. My aim is to not have inflation so that the poorest and most vulnerable don't suffer from a huge budget deficit. Right. Like, I've put more more policy wonkishly than Trump would ever put it. But there's a difference between that and just literally calling it the Inflation Reduction Act and then doing a green jobs thing.
You know, it's actually kind of my understanding. I saw a Twitter thread on this. Is my understanding is that, and this happened with the Inflation Reduction Act too, is that Chuck Schumer on this bill actually put an amendment to change the name of the bill. So it's actually no longer called the One Big Beautiful Bill.
Oh, yeah.
But everybody's just calling it because that's what it was.
Yeah.
But the Republicans did the same thing to the Inflation Reduction Act where it actually technically stopped being called that.
Oh, really?
But people still call it that.
That's right? Funny.
Just because that's how it's been marketed the whole time.
Yeah.
Similar to that. Okay, so get this. The Trump accounts... Right. Remember the MAGA accounts? They're originally proposed by in the Senate, but then actually put into the House bill.
I'm forgetting. What were they?
This is a $1,000 deposit from the Treasury for every new child born after 2025.
Mm-hmm. So like a pre-filled savings account.
Yeah. And correct, then you can then put in tax-free up to $5,000 a year. It then matures when the kid turns 18 and they have to spend it by the time they're 31. Those extra rules, the 18 to 31, those were put in by the Senate. But there's a specific thing that it was allowed, people could call it like anything, right? It was like basically the administration could decide what they're called. The bill now says they have to be called Trump accounts.
He's a master of branding. That's what I'm trying to tell you. He understands branding.
You could just see yourself in the year 2050 being like, I don't know, I got to put another $1,000 into the Trump account.
Jeez.
Who is Trump, Daddy? Well,
well, I was a Trump Republican, kids. Not like these gosh darn Republicans they have these days.
Branding.
I gotta tell you though, I mean, such pettiness just knows no bounds.
Well, it's like so many senators and stuff do this. Is like there's all these bills that are always named after senators. And
oh, sure,
like that too.
Sure.
Like it's not. This isn't abnormal.
It's true. It's just like who fucking
cares? I do find it hilarious though.
Ugh, it's ridiculous. All right, what else we got for changes? That is.
Okay. Where were
yeah, it's okay. So it's then important for rural states, and this is important to understand the dynamics between the House and the Senate. The House is much more sensitive to urban issues and urban centers, right? Because more of their population comes from that, because sure, there's population adjusted by district. The Senate typically embodies more rural concerns. So you get the rural hospital bit, and then you also have an extension to a new exemption to this estate tax, which it says single individuals, the exemption is now increased from about 14 million to 15 million, which is now indexed for inflation, which it wasn't before. So this means that the exemption on properties underneath $15 million in value is now exempted from estate tax. So okay, if you're selling your farm, you're not going to get murdered in estate tax, right? Or if you're trying to, bequeath those to your kids.
Sure. And estate tax covers things other than just real estate, right?
Yep.
That's all assets being handed down from one generation to another.
Right. Gotcha. To your children.
Gotcha.
So married couples is now from 28 million to 30 billion. Gotcha. So, and then crucially adding inflation adjustment, which is crazy that we haven't had inflation adjustment on estate tax.
Yeah,
that
seems reasonable.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some important and interesting, this took up a lot of the dialogue on the bill, especially in the last 24 hours, were the attempts to rein in Medicaid for illegal aliens. So 14 states that are controlled by Democrats currently allow, through various mechanisms, kind of fuzzy accounting and such, for immigrants to, for illegal immigrants specifically, to get access to Medicaid funds. To really change that, to really get that passed, Republicans needed 60 votes because it was a policy change to kind of tell the states what they couldn't do with the funds and to end the funny accounting. But they weren't able to get that done fundamentally. So these Democrat governors, what they do is because money's fungible, right? They take in the money from the feds for Medicaid and then they use it kind of all kinds of ways. And one of those ways is that. So they really couldn't actually do that. And it's important to understand that wasn't done because of, you know, Republicans in the Senate just being soft. That was done along with everything else we're going to talk about being taken out, was done because of the Byrd rule. The Byrd rule says, and in the budget reconciliation process, you can't do policy. You have to just do the financing of the government. Mm-hmm. That's the reconciliation process is what makes this a 51 vote process, not a 60 vote process. So it, you can't filibuster a reconciliation bill. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
So I want to address really quickly a really important issue that's been super all over social media, enraging everyone from your eco hippies to your sportsmen and a lot of people in between. And that's the land sale issue that we haven't really covered. So I'm curious what happened with that. I know that it had an initial form. There was a ton of pushback and then it changed. Where did it end up?
So this is a very typical thing that happens, especially with federal policy, but it happens at state and local as well, that the battle was fought on the idea, but the idea died in technicalities.
Okay.
Right.
Explain
so
that.
That feels correct to me. I didn't pay much attention to this issue, but that feels like what happened from what I saw on Twitter.
Right. Yeah. So the battle was, you know, Mike Lee puts forward this idea that we're going to sell some federal lands that are nearby urban areas so that you can expand into those areas and increase the supply of housing.
Okay.
With constraints to say it has to be for housing.
Sure.
And so everyone uses like a video of the Tetons. Yeah. Like nowhere near any.
What I saw is Mike Lee wants to put federal housing projects in Yellowstone. Yeah. That's what I saw on Twitter.
Most of this
which I don't think is true.
Most of this is Bureau of Land Management lands, not in, and I don't think any of it was national forest. BLM lands are typically defined by a lack of actual productivity for other uses. They usually have less grazing, less multiple use, less hiking, less everything. But they do sometimes have that.
Hunting, though.
Hunting, yes. BLM is very common for hunting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is, and it frankly was very scaled and obviously a huge thing for the West, if possible, right? A lot of Western cities are land islands, meaning that you are a city completely surrounded by land that you cannot develop and you have demand to live there. So what happens to housing prices?
They go way up.
Unless you're willing to build up, which no one's willing to do because it ruins the view shed. A made up word to define, like, I want to be able to see the mountains from my house when...
Obviously.
Yeah, which is just the most boomer approach to thinking about the future possible.
Like, I can see Russia from my house. Yes. That just made me think of that. Well, it's one of these things, and especially people in Eastern states probably don't realize how much of this lands issue is an issue in the West.
Yep.
Because like some ungodly percentage of all the Western states, like Colorado and everything to the West, is owned by the federal government. And for a period of time back, like a decade ago, this was like a major issue. The left kind of won this issue over that time period.
Over the same tactic, basically saying if the federal government transferred this lands to the states will give it away to developers because they're all money hungry, right? Now, this is the problem, right, is that the federal government can just run deficits. It can just not maintain Yellowstone for decades and just say, well, here's $1 billion, solve it, right? Well, they just print that money out of nowhere and just try to solve it with money rather than actually running anything. So so they have a point there, but the downside of that is that your lands aren't managed and they're at all. So they burn up, and so they have all the problems that they do. And the same thing with the national forest, same thing with the national parks and all those problems.
Well, that was the thing too, because like here in Montana, part of the argument was always because, you know, Montana is like fairly even on the, like it leans Republican, but it's pretty close in dynamics. But like, even if you're a Democrat, like you're a gun owner, everybody hunts, et cetera. Yeah. But like, the left won over the conservatives on the land issue because like you're going to have no place to hunt if all the the federal lands are sold off or whatever. Like it became that type of a deal. And then it just became an unwinnable issue to be able to, it gives just like, you can't talk about it if you're going to exist in public life at all ever.
Mm-hmm. So that really what happened here is that Mike Lee, you know, backed off. He cut it down from millions of acres down to 1.2 million. So far less. Still would have been a good thing for selling for development of housing in an area, in areas that are struggling with housing prices, especially for young people, and entry level rentals and housing to buy. And then it died anyways on the Byrd rule. It wasn't financial enough for the parliamentarians.
So they were saying it's too much policy and not enough just numbers.
Yes.
Right.
I just want to ask for clarity. These are very specifically BLM lands.
No, no. It's mostly BLM. It's
not Black Lives Matter, the Bureau of Land Management.
Yeah.
Good clarification.
Yeah, we're selling their mansion, guys. Take it away, Leah Thomas's medals and stealing the mansion and giving it to the taxpayers.
Likely against Black Lives Matter, selling off their land.
So, and this is just one of those things, like it's a classic example of the idea being just way too far outside of the Overton window for a set of people who just cannot conceptualize, just think public lands is a good with no trade-offs whatsoever. And for the most part, people who don't have to pay those trade-offs, they're people who tourist on the West, or if they're in the West, they see it as simply that they can't conceptualize anything else. Montana is a very large state, right? With a lot of land islands that cannot be developed right now, and people cannot
it's afford like to live 65-70% of it.
Yeah.
Like it's crazy.
But
it's
I think there has to be an element of NIMBYism in this, right? The not in my backyard phenomenon where it's like, well, I don't want Montana to be developed. So yeah, keep it in federal hands. Don't allow developers to come in and flood these things with condos and, you know, apartments as far as the eye can see.
Right.
Right. So how do you Is that a good to those people who you know, see BLM land as you know, something keeping that at bay?
Exactly. So the you can do that, but the trade off is your children will not live in Montana with you.
Fair.
Got to go get work. Or
you'll get priced out of your own state.
You're right. It really benefits people who come to Montana to play. It does not benefit the people who actually live here and want to raise their families here and actually like know their kids and their grandkids, right? Because if you have to move out, because Denver is cheaper living than Bozeman.
Crazy.
Right. I mean, so if Denver's cheaper, then you're going to go to Denver to live because so that you can afford to live.
Yeah. And Montana is now consistently in the top three most expensive states for cost of living in the United States.
Right. And you'll find that across many, many areas in the West. So it's I'm not saying that it's necessarily the best policy. It probably should have. I would have been better if it was a land transfer thing or something like that to the states. I still think that's a better idea than the current mismanagement and non-management by the feds. But, you know, you never know. We could get that change with better federal management too. But that's going to be costly. It's going to be very expensive.
For sure. But I think a big part of the problem with this is because there's a lot of nuance to what you just described. Mm-hmm. But what we hear on the news is, they're going to sell Yellowstone to Warren Buffett and he's going to put a skyscraper in there or whatever, you know,
probably
like a very, very simplified narrative. You know what I mean?
He'll probably manage it better.
And the problem is probably true.
he's good at managing his assets.
He really is.
He's very good at it.
Quite well. But I think a part of the problem is there is so much here in this bill, in this big bastard of a bill. Uh-huh. That you can't actually apply any nuance to any of these issues because you have so many things to cover. You have so many things that you have to attack that you have to understand as a voter that you have to view these things through a very low resolution lens in order to wrap your mind around all of it that we have to address in a very short amount of time. I mean, almost 1,000 pages of legislation here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like that's kind of the problem with these big omnibus, like these just massive gargantuan bills is, you know, there's going to be things in there that you like, and there's going to be things in there that you dislike. And as a political opponent, you can attack the things that you dislike,
right?
Which is what we saw with the Thomas Massey ad. Like all of those things, in reality, if they were just individual bills that he voted on, he would have been with MAGA entirely,
100%. And actually, back to his interview with Theo Vaughn, he said just that they do this just so that they can say, oh, well, I had to vote against it because this thing was in here, or I had to vote for it because this thing was in here. It kind of removes the responsibility of a given legislator from actually voting the way their constituents want because they had to do it because of X, Y, or Z reason.
Well, and that's the thing is like the continuation and making permanence of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 is hyper important. One, it's just good in general, but it's also like Trump needs that victory. So then that gives the Trump like world a supreme lack of leverage for being able to control the bad things that happen in this bill, because like they have to get this passed. So anybody that wants to get their slice of the pie into there is that they can just be like, well, then I'm just going to vote no. And you know, it doesn't matter. Like you have to get this through no matter what, like that's the leverage play that's happening with this.
For sure.
So alongside that's one scam that is this bill. And there's another scam, which is in the House side, there was a bunch of policy that everyone who knows the reconciliation process knew wasn't going to make it through the Senate, but was put in there so that House Republicans could then say, well, I voted on it for this, Right. And it's a laundry list of really interesting things. Right. So a couple of them, the state AI regulation ban was taken out. Now, this, that wasn't really for any constituency other than big tech.
This, my understanding is what this was doing was this was supposed to ban states from regulating AI for a decade.
And localities, right? So that's also keeping the data center out of your backyard.
Interesting.
Right.
So preventing states from saying, no, I don't want that here. Or yeah. Or a town from saying, I don't want that
here. Or we can't have this kind of AI here. We don't want Google's AI, or we don't want Microsoft's, or whatever.
Interesting. Yeah.
The RAINS Act was taken out. The RAINS Act is a bill that requires the federal government to go through a different process when it comes to passing new regulations, basically requiring an economic impact study. A lot of regulations at the state level, I don't know about the feds, but the state level never go through any kind of analysis of what the fiscal impact is for the people whom the bill is meant to regulate. So if you regulate a new thing, say you do the dairy industry, it impacts the dairy industry by, you don't know, it could be $100,000 or it could be $100 million, right? It could be anywhere in there. So that is passed with the same, the $100,000 regulation is passed with the same amount of scrutiny that the $100 million regulation is scrutinized. So what this says is if it passes a certain threshold, it then has to be voted on by the Congress.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was taken out because of the Byrd rule.
I'm sorry to tell you, Dave, but your favorite part of the bill, I think you were gone for this, Joe, but when we covered the bill, like in its entirety during the House time, this was the thing that Dave had just, he was all giddy with joy.
This is probably the best part of the bill. It's like no tax on tips, tax on the Jobs Act. Okay, so the suppressor, if you want to buy a suppressor, you have to go get a stamp from the ATF and you have to pay a $200 fee. The stamp was ruled as policy, so they took that out. So you were going to be able to just buy a suppressor without asking permission. Now you got to put your name on the list or continue to put your name on the list, but they did remove the tax, the $200 tax.
That's so good. I'm sure the nice. The stamp was lobbied for by the firearms ear protection lobby because they don't want you to be able to shoot a gun quietly. They want you to have to wear earplugs.
You know who probably was the hard... one of the hardest opponents to it was...
Who?
The silencer, people who sell silencers.
Why?
The reason why is because they make lots of money on getting you through the stamp process.
Of course they do.
It's a regulatory capture thing.
The very people whose products you will be able to buy more freely lobbied against this provision being in the bill because they make money getting you through the regulatory process to buy their product.
Yeah.
They make more money on shepherding you through the regulatory process than they do on their products.
Yes.
That's insane.
All right. Think about that.
Exactly what's wrong with our country right now.
Yes, sir.
Fuck that.
Yeah, right?
Ugh, I'm going to play some fucking angry music because that pisses me off.
What's even more insane is that a silencer is a muffler for your gun. It does not make your gun more lethal. It doesn't do anything other than save
your
hearing.
It makes
your
gun
hearing.
More sneaky.
Yeah, imagine how dangerous that is.
you can be so sneaky.
Silencers are still loud. It's like that's what people say to think.
They go pew.
You're not. Yeah, it isn't like the Hollywood movies where they're doing subsonic rounds like... You know, like Inception or something like that. That's not how it is.
No.
It's much louder than that.
Yes.
All right. So banning federally funded minor sex changes, which is interesting because that was what they attacked him in the, the goddamn ad.
They used that in the Massey ad.
In the Massey ad. They attacked Massey on that. It was already stripped out of the Cineside.
That ad was produced before this was taken out. Yeah.
Politics is such a dirty game.
Oh,
guys.
Yeah, dude.
I feel gross.
Yeah. Well. It taints us all.
Also, tax credit scholarship provisions. What was this?
Yeah, so they were going to do a new tax credit scholarship program. So what tax credit scholarships are is you donate to a registered student scholarship organization. You could write that off in your taxes, like any other C3, but a special program for that so that you could then fund scholarships for students.
Who voted or who lobbied against that?
These teachers' unions. But ultimately, it died by the Byrd rule.
All right. What's up with this Byrd rule?
Okay.
I mean, we know what it is, but why does it exist?
Because the government decided that it needed to pass budgets and it couldn't pass budgets with 60 votes because there wasn't enough majority for it. So the founders assumed that we would have like diplomats who are statesmen who would debate things and then come to consensus on stuff.
Mm.
They were foolish.
Very naive.
It works.
Abolish Congress.
Kyle, it worked for a long time, actually. The Byrd Rule is only like the 1960s. Like, it's not that long, right?
Yeah,
it's
it worked for a long time until we fought that Civil War. Oh, my God.
What does the Civil War have to do with this?
Until that guy got killed on the House floor. Oh, yeah. So Congress has not just been some fantasy land before this.
So you said the Byrd Rule was created in the 1960s.
1860s.
1860s. 1860s. Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
Gotcha. So, Okay. So, there was also interesting to you, Kyle.
Named after Larry Byrd, the basketball player.
There's a restructuring of the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau and the PCAOB.
I was going to ask you about this actually, because this is Elizabeth Warren's like governmental but also independent weird agency that she uses to attack crypto.
Yes. Yeah. So they were going to restructure that and abolish and dissolving. The PCAOB.
So it would have stripped away funding. Did this get hit by the Byrd Rule too? This seems like it would be a financing thing, not a policy thing.
It was decided by the parliamentarian. I mean, the RAINS Act is policy too, right? Your economic impact of a regulation passing or not passing is tremendous, right? So all of these things, you know, in a sense could have been that. I mean, maybe not the stamp. Maybe not the stamp. I get that that's policy. Being requiring to be on a government list is that. But a lot of these, I mean, the tax credit scholarships, it's finance. You're giving a tax credit. So why doesn't it count? I mean, captured parliamentarian? I don't know.
Let me explain the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau a little bit. Is like, so what this is that this is this like weird quasi-governmental but not governmental organization headed up by, with like independent funding. Like it's like this weird amalgamation of things. That's basically just like Elizabeth Warren acting as a puppet of the banks to attack anybody that is like banker competitors. So like she aimed this as like part of the Operation Chokepoint 2.0 kind of thing, which is a way of stifling out funding for crypto projects and stuff like that, and use this to attack all of her enemies, which are like the enemies of the banks, because she's just like a banker puppet. That's what this organization was, that they were trying to strip the funding away from.
But it did not work because it was policy, not finance.
Yes.
Okay.
So there was some mining and BWCA, Boundary Waters Rule reversal stuff that got lifted. There was a military intelligence expansion with authorized a new interagency office of domestic strategic threat coordination.
Is this my boys at Palantir?
probably. Yeah. And that was also ended. So there's a civil libertarian like win there, maybe. I don't know enough about it to be able to say for certain.
It's like a tiny white pill amongst a lot of black pills.
Yeah.
Like there's plenty of white pills in here. There's just a lot of black pills in here too. That's the thing.
You're like one of those like retirees with like all your pills in like one big box for the whole week, and you're like just taking them all for the like on Monday.
Is it white or black today? It's like, it's not red or blue anymore.
It feels like a lot of black lately, I'll be honest.
I just want to continue to inject because like there are a lot of things in here that we have said that are good in here.
Yeah.
I want us to be clear about that.
And a lot of those are still in the bill. So for example, it does permanently do the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which is a good thing, right? We had, you know, the most important thing that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act did was permanent, which was the reduction in corporate income tax. But it does make the individual income tax parts of that permanent, which is a good thing. I mean, it simplified the tax code and reduced rates. Even the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act had all kinds of problems in it, right? So we kind of miss all those. We had like the boat tax and like the yacht tax and like all like the golf course tax exemptions and all this crap, right? So it does, but we kind of lose all that when we look at the big picture. And I think we'll look back on this is that we'll lose some of this stuff, but it's not trivial, right? I mean, obviously, what's also still in it, black bill, is the $5 trillion debt ceiling.
Thank you for mentioning that piece of black pill wisdom.
So there's and then they got the spending, like $350 billion is still there for Trump's border and national security agenda, including $46 billion for the U.S.-Mexico border wall and $45 billion for our new 100,000 migrant detention facility
in Florida.
Something
that was started under Biden.
Alligator Alcatraz.
Yeah.
did you see the comment, like, Trump had this comment, I wish I had it up. He had this thing where it was like, It was something like, well, what if people escape? It's like, well, then they have to contend with the wildlife. Like, seems like a good deal. It's wild.
Crazy. It's scary because alligators are scary. But when I read that they have like big snakes. I was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That's Trump's terrifying. Like, I wouldn't want to swim through the Everglades. That's what he said to the reporter.
Yeah.
I'm glad we can laugh about some of this, because most of this I'm just like, so I'm back to my old jaded libertarian self. I'm ready to quit politics forever.
This is governing, brother. That's how it goes.
I know.
And by being engaged, we can shape the landscape.
You can be engaged by speaking in the comments.
Yes.
Let your senators know how you feel. What do you like? What do you dislike? Was it too big? Should we do away with omnibus bills?
Would you swim through the Everglades? I mean, whatever you'd like to tell us.
Ron DeSantis know. He's watching.
He's watching. He's in our comments.
So we got 10,000 new immigration custom enforcement officers with a $10,000 signing bonus and surge for Border Patrol officers enforcement and deportation actions. So more money for Border Patrol officers, more ICE enforcers. Which does make sense, because there is, like, you know, obviously that's not surprising. It's just a bummer it couldn't have been an own bill, right? But you can't get enough Democrats on
board.
That
is the thing. Like this $45 billion for 100,000 migrant detention facility beds, which my understanding is something that they're lacking, which is kind of the reason for super jail over in El Salvador. That's kind of the reason why that's going on, is because Tom Homan's coming here. It's like, I literally have no place to put these people. Mm-hmm. And so, but $45 billion does seem a lot for $100,000 beds is a lot. And you need, like, I guess you need, like, to build the things to put those beds. But
how,
like,
much did Alligator Alcatraz cost?
How much did Bukele build it for?
I don't know.
A lot less.
Yeah, a lot less. 100%. But, yeah. So it is one of those things where you're kind of like, is that really the price tag of that thing? You know.
But we also don't want to do a Bukele thing where it's like, your day is sitting on concrete.
I am totally down for super jail. I don't know what you're talking about. I am not part of your collectivism here, David.
Okay. So this is another funny one. So the Attorney General would have a $3.5 billion for a similar, like, immigration enforcement fund, known as the Bridging Immigration Related Deficits Experienced Nationwide, or Biden program.
That's amazing. Sorry, I wasn't listening to the policy. I was just listening to the acronym.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Wait. Read it again.
It's another $3.5 billion for the Justice Department to do similar immigration enforcement.
The bridging immigration related deficits experienced nationwide.
I love how they, so in order to fit the R in there for related, they hyphenated immigration related. It's immigration hyphen related so that they could do BIDEN.
It is so dumb.
It's such a
meme policy. And it's
so funny.
I mean, I think it's contempt for the American to say $3.5 billion isn't a lot of money, right? I mean, that's a lot of money, guys. That's a lot of money to do more investigations, right? This should be in the millions of dollars, maybe not
the
billions.
You would think it would be in the millions of dollars, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then there is...
That does make me think that there's some sort of, like, something we're not seeing where that money's going.
What do you mean?
I don't know. Like, it just seems kind of like, I don't know.
Government's a cartel sort of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It gives me those types of vibes.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Like, they're just stealing our money.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. And then
taxation
washing
theft,
it through their systems, right? So she gives it to a nonprofit to do something and to do a study, blah, 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 that sort of thing. Maybe. One of the, I think, more interesting policy things that are happening with the bill that isn't being discussed at all, I haven't seen it anywhere, is that immigrants who are asylum seekers would now have to pay a new various
$100 fee, isn't it?
Yeah.
I thought it was $100, I think.
Yeah. So, and I think the Senate might have diversified that a little bit for depending on status, but still, very interesting, right? I mean, and that's always been part of the real challenge here, is that, you know, even if you're caught, there's not, the downside is bad. It's not great because you don't get to come to America and live here, but the downside isn't that big. So an actual fee does maybe increase a little bit of that, but can they pay the fee? I mean,
if they're coming here with brand new clothes and shoes and backpacks funded by some NGO, that pretty easy to slip a crisp Benjamin in their pocket for the fee.
Yeah, if they get caught.
I mean,
yeah, at least we're taxing it now.
Yeah, at least the enforcement is creating a little bit of revenue. I mean,
look, Lutnick needs to get, like, as the commerce secretary, no, he needs to get those external revenue coming.
It's not creating revenue because the U.S. government is giving the money to the NGO through USAID.
No, but we're getting our own money back, Joe.
But I believe they're not allowed. I believe they're not allowed Medicaid anymore, though. I think that was in the bill too, right?
Like, no, that failed.
Oh, that was taken out.
That was failed.
Dang it.
Yeah.
The music's back.
Okay, so the Senate provided $40 million to establish Trump's very long sought National Garden of American Heroes monument.
What?
So he wants to do that.
Okay.
He wants a new monument.
Great.
Well, the left did tear down all of our statues. So yeah. We got to replace those.
That's going to be a big statue of Trump. It's going to giant gold Trump statue right next to MLK on the mall.
I'm going
to
come.
All right, there's a new excise tax on university endowments.
Good. I just hate the universities.
There's one provision that bars Planned Parenthood from federal funds. I think that might have been taken out. I might have mischaracterized that. $88 million is earmarked for a Pandemic Response Accountability Committee. You like that, Joe?
You seemingly missed the thing here that I just know would outrage you. There's a $200 tax on gun silencers and short-barreled rifles and shotguns still in there.
No, that did get taken out. Sorry, that was an old note.
Oh,
yeah, I was confused at one point about whether or not the stamp was in or the tax was in. No, the stamp.
I thought you were referring to the Planned Parenthood stuff.
Yeah. And then this is also interesting because this did stay in.
Wait, before we move on from the thing you said, I might like because I need it at this point.
$88 million for the Pandemic Response Accountability Committee.
Okay, what is that?
I have no idea, but it sounds good.
Is that a Rand Paul thing? It feels like a Rand Paul thing.
Let's find out.
You know. Yeah. I certainly think that there needs to be accountability around the pandemic response. But I don't really know how that gets done because all of the people who would have been accountable got pardoned, right?
Yeah, and they say Rand Paul is supposed to be calling Fauci up for testimony, which he won't be covered under
the Fifth Amendment.
Are Biden's pardons... Because like, there's a lot of the legality on the auto pen over executive orders and things like that.
To me, that's
is that being included with the pardons in the argument there? I wonder.
I don't know. I mean, the thing around the pardons and the auto pen to me feels like a little bit of just political bluster. It's like, I mean, I don't know. Like, if you're going to do something about it, like, it seems fairly cut and dried. They seem to know who within the administration had access to that and who would have been a part of it. What are you going to do? I mean, are they just going to call them in front of a committee in Congress and wag their finger and get a soundbite out of it? Like, I just have so little faith in the ability of the government to actually effectuate any fucking change anymore.
I'm curious from the legal standpoint, because I believe Trump's taking, like, the Trump admin's taking this to court right now. Like, this is like a White House court issue.
Good.
Is the auto pen thing, and I wonder if the pardons are included in that. That'd be something worth looking.
I mean, I've read that. Because there's so many and such a short.
I feel like
time.
We covered that earlier on, and I'm just forgetting because it's been months since so much has happened since this administration. But yeah.
So I have it. The PRAC was established in.
It's like Iraq.
The PRAC with a C, not a Q.
Our Kelly's favorite.
The PRAC was established in March 2020. Under the CARES
Act.
It's
next to the baby oil.
Oh, my God.
So I haven't listened to a single word yet.
It was established with the CARES Act to provide oversight for federal pandemic relief spending. Now, this is the most crazy federal bureaucratic bullshit. It operates within the Council of Inspector Generals on Integrity and Efficiency and consists of 21 federal inspectors, inspector generals, tasked with promoting transparency of approximately the $5 trillion in CARES funding, investigating fraud, waste and abuse and mismanagement of the programs funded by the CARES Act. And that's like Paycheck Protection, the Healthcare Enhancement Act, Families First, Coronavirus Response Act, or Coronavirus Preparedness Response Supplemental Appropriations Act.
Fuck
it. What's the acronym there?
Yeah.
It's got to be an acronym. Something that long has to have an acronym.
Yeah, well, it didn't have good meme power. Coordinating oversights among IGs and federal, state, and local partners and mitigating marriage debt. So this is like... trying to find and prosecute people who misused their COVID funds.
Who went and bought Lamborghinis with PPP funds?
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
All right. Yep.
Yep.
Get them. Go All get right. them, I guess.
I'll see how it happens.
They better find more than $88 million in fraud.
Yeah. And here's another one that they might like.
True. That's a good point.
This might bring your truck to America. So, he is cutting... So, the way CAFE standards work... is that you have a fine at a certain percentage of the total amount of cars that you offer that are over or under the new CAFE standard, right? So if it's now 26 miles per gallon or 27 or whatever, you can offer some below, but if you offer too much below, you're going to aggregate more fines, right? And so it works by a multiplier. And basically what he did is he took the one part of the multiplier and he made it zero. So the total amount of fine for violating CAFE standards, if this passes...
Is zero.
Effectively ending CAFE standards.
Which, well,
it's now like a recommendation. Like, your car should be this many miles per gallon.
Well, I don't know that was ever really the thing holding the Hilux back from entering the U.S. market. It was the chicken tax.
Oh, yeah, right.
But which is like a stupid tariff from like 200 years, I don't even fucking know, 100 years ago.
Right.
I did see something come up. I remember it was on an episode you weren't on, Joe. The chicken tax showed up on something that we were covering at some point. And I was like, it was like a week after you had explained this chicken tax thing with your truck stuff. And I what was that?
I don't remember.
There was something we covered. And it was like that chicken tax just like popped up in the research for it.
It's one of the more silent but deadly.
I had never heard of it until you mentioned it on that episode.
Bullshit bureaucratic nonsense that's ever existed. Primarily because it keeps the Toyota Hilux out of the U.S. market.
Yeah. Oh, no, it had to do with one of the trade deals. It was when I was covering all the trade stuff. Mm. Is that it was something that was subject for change on a trade deal. Because who was the chicken tax with?
Well, it was
England. England.
I believe it was England.
Yeah, it was when I was covering Starmer. The trade deal when the U.K. was the first to rush in for a deal with Trump. It's like, I think it got removed. Or something, or it's part of the deal.
We will have to fact check this.
It's part of the negotiations.
Any emotion around this because I am too tired of being.
I can't remember. Go back and listen to the episode where we talked about Starmer. I believe it's in there. It's in the Starmer episode.
So this what the real impact of this could be if it stays in the bill towards the end. To the end, who knows? Is it would effectively mean so our car companies around the world still sell old engines. Right, like you can buy a brand new car in India that has a 2001 Ford engine in it for like $10,000.
Yeah, but you can't do that here because we have emissions fuel economy standards.
Because of CAFE, right?
And what does that stand for, CAFE?
I can't remember. Don't ask me that.
Car
average fuel
car
economy
affordability.
car average fuel efficiency.
That's that checks
something
out.
Like that.
Yep.
Yeah. So
heard it here first, folks. That's a fact.
that's what's interesting about it is that could mean the production of or importation of more cars into the United States, therefore a leveling off of prices or more affordable options for new cars. And just think about and what the ironies of that though, Joe, is one of the unintended consequences of CAFE standards, why it actually results in sometimes more pollution, is that means you hang on to older cars longer rather than getting rid of it and buying a new car with better fuel standards, right? Mm-hmm. So you could buy $10,000 for a 1990s car, or you could buy it for a brand new early 2000s, right?
True. Very true. Unfortunately, Kyle, I did just grok this, and the chicken tax on light trucks remains untouched after the trade negotiations.
Oh, maybe that's what I said. Maybe I found out that it was something that was up for negotiation and it wasn't changed.
Oh, yes.
That might have been
I remember now.
That's what I said. Yep. I remember talking about it on that episode, though.
All right. So that's what's in the bill, and it only took us on an hour to go through it.
Okay. So Jesus Christ. Let's just do a little bit of recap and analysis of this now. So, I mean, on net, big beautiful bill, beautiful or bullshit?
It's kind of neutral in my eyes. Like I said, there's good and bad. I think that the spending problem is probably not going to be as high as a lot of the claims. I think that there's probably going to be some synthesis between these two opposing views. But I think it's still going to be a problem.
So if you had to take a side, gun to your head, better or worse? You're picking worse.
I'm neutral.
You can't be neutral.
I think I can be neutral.
I have a gun to your head. You cannot be neutral. You have to pick a side. Which is it?
It's hard to say. Like some of it to me is I have to see how some of the other stuff plays out on these other bills.
He is such a Canadian.
So on some of these other bills, like we still have future things like the farm bill coming up and stuff like that. Like, and there's also measures. I saw Senator Ron Johnson talking about, I've seen him talking about this a lot, and he's one of the people that has been like a fiscal hawk on this stuff, is that there's a ton of bills coming in that are Doge cuts, that are a lot of the things that people wanted in here, but that's not what's supposed to be in here.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah, but that's using a teaspoon to bail water out of a sinking
freighter.
I'm not
saying, well, the thing is, I'm waiting. I feel like I need to wait and see what those are. You know what I mean? Before this bill can be judged in its entirety. Like right now, where the bill stands right now, the big problems that I have with it is the deficit side of things. Like I think that those are very reasonable problems to have with it. But I also think that the straight up doomerism that's happening around with it is kind of like, there's like a ideological purity thing that's happening there where it's like, it's not really as bad as I think a lot of people are making it out to be. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of the problem that I'm... That's the problem I'm having with the dialogue around it right now.
Sure. I mean, you're right. There's nuance to everything, and I agree with that.
It's also like, if this wasn't going through right now, too, it's like, taxes would be increasing, like, all this other problems, and that's a problem of, like, the way that I think we do policy. Like, there's actually a structural way we do policy in Congress that is, like, a bigger issue, in a sense, where it's, like, these things are going to keep happening as long as that type of policy, like, that type of process continues to happen.
I agree. David, where are you at on it?
So, the DOGE rescission package, which has passed the House, but has not been taken up by the Senate, it has till July 18th, probably will result in about $9 billion total cut so far.
Case in point.
But there's several of these bills that are coming. Like that,
but it doesn't matter. Does not matter, Kyle. They could be hundreds of billions of dollars. We just raised the debt limit by $5 trillion.
I get that.
The problem.
I get that.
So, I don't see how you can quibble around with these, like, oh, yeah, like, tax cuts are good. Well, we made this permanent. I get that. Those are good things. But what the fuck are we doing about this debt?
But also, like, the thing is, in order to figure out the debt problem, like, you need a massive restructuring of Congress right now. Like, this is an election problem that has to happen.
Yes, I agree.
Like, there's a reason why this is why I said up front, there's a reason why this is a 51-50 vote.
But the trick is like, why this problem. Bill is bad is because of all the moderate Republicans who made it bad and all the defense spending crazy Republicans that made it bad.
Yes.
Not because of Rand Paul and Thomas Massie, the only people being attacked by Trump. So what are we going to see in the midterms are either is Thomas Massie maybe losing?
Yeah. And all the moderate Republicans.
He's not going to lose.
I don't think
he will. But you see what I mean? Like, that's the only phenomenon.
Dude gets like 80% of the vote. He'll be fine.
Well, that's great. And like, again, small win. But like, what you're really looking at.
We're also going to divert millions of dollars.
Please don't interrupt me.
So, I'm sorry.
Please interrupt me.
I wanted to unpack that.
Somehow they're fighting each other.
Why am I even here?
No, I want to say.
Somehow they're fighting each other. I'm like, left scot free.
I just wanted to push back on that, Kyle. Go for it. It isn't cost free. This is diverting millions of dollars from other districts where you could either pick up seats by defeating Democrats or enforcing better conservatives. But instead, Randy Fine is fine under Trump, and he's a great American, but Thomas Massie is a problem. Right, so we're not going to spend money. We're going to spend money trying to defeat Thomas Massie rather than trying to get more Republicans into office if you're a Republican.
That's exactly the point I was going to make.
Oh, really? I'm sorry.
That's okay. Oh, really? That's all right. I'll just go fuck myself.
Well, the thing that I'm also trying to paint, though, here is that there's also a political reality of these tax cuts. Taxes are going up like some ungodly number at the end of the year if this doesn't go through. Like, so like that's kind of the political reality of the situation where it's like, I'm trying to kind of find the gem in the,
I get
right?
it.
Like that's kind of the deal that's like the shit sandwich that exists right now that we're all kind of taking a bite into right now is that that's the unfortunate reality of the situation. And there's not really a whole lot of leverage there to be able to fix that problem because there was a deadline that was set, which is the end of this year for those cuts. And now a lot of these tax cuts that are happening in this bill, there's now a future deadline on those because they're temporary until they're voted on and made permanent in the future. Right. And like, this is the problem of these like fiscal cliffs that we keep setting up for ourselves is like, okay, well now we got to do a new thing. Time to slam all this stuff into a bill again. Push it on to the next few years later. Like we're just going to keep going through this cycle. And that's the unfortunate reality of the situation in my eyes.
But it's a reality that is established and enforced by people giving into this process and not insisting better, right? It's the end of the year. It's only July. If they wanted to pass something better, they could have gone through the actual budget process and they wouldn't have these problems, right? This could be that. And that's a correct challenge, is they can't actually reform the real problems with the budget. If you go down a little bit, Kyle, onto the, what was that link that I put in there? I forgot to put it up. Just Facts USA, you got to check that out. It has some stuff on the federal budget deficit, and it's difficult to visualize how much of the budget is mandatory spending that has to be changed with policy. And that's why you can't put it into this bill. That is the biggest issue that we have, is our liabilities in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And that wouldn't have passed the Byrd rule, right? So you can't put it into that bill. That's the strongest case from the proponents of the bill.
That's the other point I actually
wanted to make. But the challenge is that you can't, if you make campaign promises you can't fulfill, don't make campaign promises, right? If you can't pay for tax on tips or these other taxes, don't make those promises. And then the American people will vote for these moderate Republicans and then vote for Trump. Right. And then get this result. So like, who's ultimately responsible?
the Americans.
Voters? Yeah. Like, we are creating this, right? So, like, until people wake up and realize that deficit spending is a tax that hurts the poorest the most through inflation, we're not going to solve this problem. It's either going to solve when it collapses and people won't buy our bonds, or it'll solve when, you know, like, enough consensus actually comes about and we got a melee moment.
People aren't going to start buying our bonds. What, are they going to buy Canadian bonds?
Well, if we can't pay them, if we can't cover the interest on the debt, Kyle, then they will stop.
And like every single situation throughout all this, people are like, oh my God, the bonds market. And then they just go back to buying bonds again, like 5 minutes later. Like that's been the reality.
I'm not claiming this is happening now. I'm claiming this is a problem at the future.
Right? Let me finish the point there, because now I forgot what the point was.
Oh, sorry.
There was... I wanted to just kind of like, because there's other, what I'm kind of saying is that there's other underlying factors that are outside this bill, like future deregulation side on like the energy side of things, like interest rates going down, like all of these types of factors are going to also change the structure of the economy and are probably going to result in net increases in revenue that's coming in, which will chip away at the deficit. Now, the question to me will be like, does it chip out the deficit fully? And that's kind of the Trump argument. And I'm not convinced that it's going to chip fully away at that. But also, we haven't seen what's going to happen. But it's also, Congress is going to be a roadblock on that probably too. Like, that's the concern that I have. So like, that's where I'm kind of in the wait and see, is like, there is a broader structure of what's going on here. So just only looking at this bill doesn't give a holistic picture of everything. Like, you have to put all the pieces together fully, and all the pieces haven't been brought to the table yet.
Yeah, my challenge is that the Trump assumptions that tariffs can simultaneously bring in revenue, grow the economy, and be used as a negotiating tool simultaneously without any trade-offs is like a 0%, right, to me. Like, if you tax something, you get less of it. So we're going to have less economic growth with higher tariffs. So then you're predicting, but deregulation, but they don't really see.
But there's other variables around this too. Like, it's not as simple as just tariffs up. Like there's other variables that are happening around there too. Is like, there are incentives for manufacturing coming back into America. Now, that's going to take some time. It's like, there's a concern there, right? Like,
well, in like a 10-year time span, right? That's the problem, is everything is like in a 10-year time span, which will have different Congress, different tariffs, right?
But also, as part of the negotiations, and we're seeing these with the trade deals, and that's where I've been monitoring, is like the individual trade deals with a lot of these countries. Is now a lot of countries are reducing their tariffs on us on this or that or thing. And like, so like, we're still kind of in that process, sure, right now. That's the thing where I'm like there's still a wait and see, and I don't have a fully formed opinion on what's good or evil yet.
Right. Like, I'm not even asking you to do that. It's just like trying to judge it in net. So, saying you were a senator, would you have voted for it? Like, that's the mental exercise. I mean, and people want that because what they want to see is like, well, did my guy voted for it? Is that a good or bad thing? How do I judge it? Like, that's a natural question that I think audiences ask that's reasonable.
But that to me is too short-term thinking. Like, is like, there's still a more holistic picture to have to digest the whole thing.
Sure.
To be able to come to a fully formed opinion. Like just criticizing this thing when there's other things that are still on the table is like, without the other things on the table, you can't have a fully formed opinion, in my opinion. Like, in the way that I'm seeing.
Sure.
That's kind of how I'm.
Sure. But yeah, but Congress is done in the step by step of like voting for this now and then voting for those things later.
Well, and that's the thing is like, the biggest roadblock to Trump's plan in my eyes is Congress.
Well,
Congress is the hardest part of this entire battle.
And the courts, like the courts just struck down a lot of tariffs. I think almost all of them with a decision that he can't use IEEPA to do these things. Well, not without congressional approval. Because there's no emergency.
What is IEEPA?
That was the emergency authorization used to implement tariffs.
It's what he used as the enforcement for his executive order is the thing. My understanding is that there's a lot of nuance to that though too, and I don't have it at the top.
It's being challenged.
Yeah,
it's gonna still go through the court. But this is
because I keep seeing these articles of like, this thing happened and it struck down the thing, and then when I actually dig into it, it's always like, well, actually, not really fully.
But like, this is the court process, right? I'm just saying that it wasn't some random federal or district court judge. It was the U.S. Court of International Trade, a specialized court for this, right? So it's non-trivial. Like, it's a bigger step than a lot of the other ones we've seen. So will it still happen? Could happen. Will the Illinois Troy importers case, will that happen? I don't know. But I'm just saying, like, there are lots of barriers along the way. That doesn't mean that mm-hmm. When you're trying to make, it's a different question between, is the Big Beautiful Bill a good bill, or is the Trump agenda overall good? Right. And I think a lot of people were saying, overall, okay, I'm willing to trust him. Right.
Especially because his approval ratings among GOP right now are highest that they've ever been, too, which is interesting.
Right. But
amongst everything that's been happening.
At the same time, 53% of GOP says that this bill is a bloated spending mess. Right. And will he own that?
That's the thing. That's the biggest thing to me, is that I'll be curious, because if the other stuff around it, like, it's like the bill can be a total flop depending on what the future holds in everything else.
Right.
That's where I'm taking kind of the neutral stance, where I'm just like, wait and see on the everything else, and then we'll have a fuller picture of it. That's my entire stance on the bill.
So one last note that I want to make is
also that there's political realities that exist. It's just like, again, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act has to pass in order for the GOP to have any victory.
Yeah.
Like, that's also just a
political reality. They could have done a clean passage too. And they could have passed this as a separate bill.
I don't see how that would
happen. GOP would not have voted for just extending the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in a simple one-page bill.
I'm doubtful of that.
No. This was done so he could leverage the other spending priorities, so that he could increase border enforcement, so he could do the monument, so he could do combine this with the no tax on tips and stuff like that. So this was done intentionally.
I'm doubtful it would have just passed on its own. Without there would have been backroom dealings happening with the mods in Congress.
Oh, they would have tried.
Yeah.
But he
would have had to be a bunch of nuances happened with it.
He could just vetoed it and then called their bluff. Of course, he has all the leverage. Yeah,
then the headlines would be Trump vetoed tax cuts.
Right? Yeah. And then the Republicans would take that, and then they would either have to pass a clean one or not. Like, he could negotiate that way with the Republicans. Instead, he negotiates that way, not with the mods, but with the libertarians and the conservatives, right? That's the only people he goes after. So he the strategy could have been different, and he could have got a different result, is my point.
I have a hard time seeing the strategy being different. Like, that's where I think that there's a little bit too much of like, they could have just passed the bill like without it. I'm not convinced that that's true.
I'd ask him on my basis,
but I feel like that's just like an assertion that is just being made. Like, I'm not convinced.
Well, no, I'm saying
that's true.
Knowing what I know about Republicans and knowing what I know about the incentives around the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, he could have done a clean authentication of that. Of course he could have. All he had to do was call up Mike Johnson and say, I want a clean. It's part of my strategy. And they would have done that. Like,
Had to have 60 votes?
No, you get to do a reconciliation. They don't have to do all this other stuff in order to do reconciliation. They did the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act on reconciliation.
I feel like this would have been extremely problematic in like committees and things like that. I feel like there would have been,
don't get me wrong, there would have been a political battle, but
without
it
getting shoved into this bill.
But it would have been against the mods rather than against Thomas Massey. Does that make sense? And against Rand Paul.
I'm not seeing the likelihood.
And frankly, they only lost Rand Paul because of one provision. He would have voted for the whole bill, even given the deficit, if it wasn't for the debt ceiling increase.
Yeah.
Now, this is part of it too, is like the overall scam, and to answer for me about why this is such a problem of the bill, is it fundamentally doesn't drain the swamp. I mean, what the swamp runs on are these kinds of scams, right? Where they say, the House Republicans get this huge list of great stuff in it, like the RAINS Act, right? This was one of the real killers for me. And the stamp, right? and the silence scam. And then they sign on to the bill and they vote for it based upon that. It goes to the Senate. All those get taken out. And now when they comes back to the side, they'd be like, well, I can't be a flip-flopper, right? They've been impregnated by the bill. They can't just not be pregnant anymore, right? They have to follow through and deliver the baby to the president, right? That's one of the real challenges to like disrupting that culture. And Donald Trump is not the guy who was ever the guy who was willing to really take on that problem, that part of the culture, right? He's going to fight it through his orientation of fighting it, right? Which is not that. Not systems and policy and process change in Congress.
Right. Well, guys,
no, he tries to bully his way through. Like, that's the truth of it. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, Joe. But like,
all good.
That's the thing, no is problem. Like, that's why all the executive orders and stuff, he just tries to bully his way through and then see what gets worked out in courts.
Yeah.
Like, that tends to be the Trump strategy from as an executive.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please now, Joe. Go ahead, buddy.
Go ahead.
I'm going to tie it up because we're going a little long, but I appreciate you guys for your thoughtful debate and your passion. Let us know what you think in the comments. Is the Big Beautiful Bill beautiful or bullshit? For David Rand, for Kyle Mack, I'm Joe Sheehan. See you guys next time. We'll Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.